This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. And by Harry's, for guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WhatTheTech when you check out.
What the Tech?
Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin, and this week, I'm not joined by Paul. Paul's not here. Paul is traveling, and he forgot to tell me he was traveling early in the week, and he messaged me in this panic, and he's screaming, oh my God, I'm traveling. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't do the show. And I said, don't worry about it. I got a better replacement. The one, the only, Ayaz Akhtar. How you doing, Ayaz?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
A friend of mine, a close friend of mine.
Yes, I've been at your house. I've held your baby, and I've also patted Paul on the head. There's photos of me rubbing his hair. So
there is.
We're all good friends.
We do live in a weird little tech bubble here, huh? It is interesting how everybody is kind of connected in some way.
Yeah, there's a lot of that happening.
Yeah, and we're going to a wrestling show on Saturday.
Yeah, if we get seats next to each other. Maybe we'll just bring our own seats.
Well, no, it's general admission, so it's standing room.
Okay, so we're going to be standing the whole time?
Yeah. It's tiny. The place is small.
Is it over a car dealership?
It is over a car dealership.
Okay. This is going to be fun. I got to make sure that I don't say anything too loud. I don't want the wrestlers to get mad at me.
So it's interesting because, you know, you're known in the tech world and tech broadcasting. This is what I do with Paul. I do a tech podcast. But Ayaz and I rarely discuss tech. It's strangely not a part of our friendship.
No, it's because it's... what's on your phone and how is it working? And then there's always this insider information that we can't say that we know, so we can't say anything to each other about.
We talk in circles most of the time whenever we're talking about technology. It's like a conversation where, oh, did you hear? Yeah. Oh, you know about? Yeah. Okay. That's as far as we go. But our friendship is mostly based on our love for pro wrestling.
Well, yeah, because pro wrestling is fun.
As
dumb as it gets, you know, you can always blame one guy or two guys for why it's going badly. But when technology goes wrong, it gets really ugly.
Yeah.
Like, super ugly.
It does. You know what I'll tell you? The same amount of passion amongst technology fans, people on, you know, the Apple side and the Microsoft side and the Google side, that does exist in the pro wrestling world. So it's not really that different to me. Because I get called an idiot by both the tech people and by pro wrestling fans. So it's perfect. I'm an idiot, you know, all around.
Yeah, you're right. Ring of Honor is pretty much like Opera users.
Yeah.
If you use Opera. They love it. They don't understand why it's not bigger. And they did stuff first there, but it's still Opera.
Yeah. It's interesting. The whole tech thing is interesting. So we're going to talk about this. We have so much to talk about here. There's a lot of cord cutting news, and I want to talk to you about this because this is a topic that really fascinates me and Paul too. I wrote the notes thinking Paul was on early in the week, and when you came on, I was like, oh, this is perfect because I know Ayaz is into this stuff too, so I'm going to talk to him about that. But before we do that, guys, let's talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. If you are developing an application, if you accept mobile payments, you have to check out Braintree. A lot of you guys are developers, and a lot of you guys are business owners. You guys are selling some sort of service, some sort of good. Braintree is a great service to implement. It integrates really quickly, and I'm going to explain to you what it is. But before I do that, I'm going to tell you, the companies that use this are Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, and even Uber. By next year, probably even next week, there's going to be a whole new way of accepting mobile payment. Maybe it'll be something like the next Bitcoin. Maybe it'll be the next Apple Pay. Maybe it'll be the next PayPal, Android Pay. You know, every week there's some sort of new mobile payment system coming around. I have Samsung Pay on my phone, and I've never actually used it because I don't know too many places that are accepting it right now. But regardless, there may be a place, there may be a service that comes out, and you want to start accepting these different types of payment methods. Fortunately, Braintree is a full-stack payment system. so it is easily adaptable to whatever the future holds. Literally, it's a couple lines of code. You put it in there, and that's it. You're all good, and it's going. Accept everything from pounds to PayPal to the next big innovation from any device with just one integration. And when the new payment method comes out, you'll just have to do an update, a few lines of code, and you're good to go. No late nights, no complicated sessions with your developer. It's no stress, and it's super, super easy. For more information, guys, go to BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. That's BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. I get emails all the time. One of our viewers, Lewis, integrated Braintree in his mobile application, and he was actually shocked. He goes, listen, I know a lot of guys, they talk about how easy these things are, and I heard you're using it. And honestly, the only reason why I signed up for it is because I heard you and Paul talk about it. I really didn't think it was going to be as easy as you made it out to be. But it was so easy, and he was so happy to see how easy this thing was. BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. Go check them out and let them know that we sent you. I want to thank Braintree for, of course, supporting the show and, of course, for supporting the GFQ network. I love those guys. And it's a PayPal company, so that makes it even easier. So, IS.
Yes.
I want to talk to you about this because there has been... It's interesting. You know, when it rains, it pours, right? That's how it always is. And when there's a trend in tech, it always ends up spreading to other companies. There was a story early in the week that came out that Hulu is interested in getting into the live TV game. Along with that, there was a story that YouTube came into this and said, well, they're interested also. And now I read a story that Netflix is also interested in getting into live TV. And they're all looking to debut before, as soon as 2017, hopefully right around the first quarter of 2017. I want to talk to you about this because this is a major shift as far as how broadcast television is delivered to the end user. I have Verizon Fios. I don't know what you have. You're Time Warner over there?
I'm a Time Warner guy.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm sorry. But we are still paying for television. I'm still paying for time. I know a lot of people have cut the cord, but I'm paying for TV because of a few simple reasons. It's pretty much... I want to watch wrestling on the TV, and I don't have a service that will cater to that right now. I'm paying some astronomical fee because they kind of lock you into not being able to downgrade and cut your package, because once you cut one thing, you can't cut another. And the bill, it's like a $10 difference if you have 200 channels or 20 channels. But this is a very different approach. YouTube, here's one story here. YouTube may unveil a paid TV service called Unplugged, where it'll bundle your broadcast and cable channels over the internet, according to Bloomberg News. The new service, which could cost as little as $35 a month, is expected to debut in 2017. What do you think of this, Ayaz? I know that the younger generation does not give two craps about cable TV. They're not signing up for cable TV. Do you think this is a good way for them to be enticed to sign up for cable TV?
I think YouTube is a pretty tough place to be if you're going to have video at all. Just discoverability there is really, really hard. And unless YouTube is going to be promoting this material up front and there's like watch live or go to your broadcast networks, unless they do some kind of custom interface, I don't know if that's really going to work, because YouTube, it's kind of like if you think about what iTunes did to music. It didn't matter what album it was on. It didn't matter what label it was on. It didn't matter what format it was on. You just would pick and choose what you wanted. And if this stuff kind of – this thing happens on YouTube particularly, I'm not sure how they would do it, because it's so video by video based. There are a couple of options that I've noticed recently that might be hinting towards this live service. There's the I'm Feeling Lucky button, where it'll just start streaming you a whole bunch of autoplay videos, one after another on a playlist. And I think that's a great idea, a good way to tell people, hey, we might have something like this in the future. Maybe you want to watch classic TV and you don't really care about the lineup. It's like, there's I Love Lucy and then there's The Twilight Zone. Maybe it can build a playlist dynamically. I think it's really about how they put it together. But YouTube, I think, is a really hard sell. Hulu, I think, is an easier one.
Yeah, I think it's less convoluted with Hulu or Netflix. You know, it's a more of a... I get it. I still personally have a problem watching YouTube on a big screen. And I don't know about you. It's a problem for me. My brain can't comprehend watching a 3-minute video on the big screen.
Well, do you have YouTube Red?
I don't have Red, but I have, YouTube on my Fire TV. and, you know, I'll be able to, you know, I'll pull up videos and stuff. It's only a couple things that I'll watch there that are really high quality and like 20-minute videos, but I can't go through, you know, some random cat video on my TV.
See, now I watch so much YouTube on my TV. It's a 55-inch TV, and it's because I was a Google Play Music customer. And then they're like, here's YouTube Red. No ads for you. So the barrier to entry to watching the dumbest video got really low. So I started watching some really dumb material that I would never watch, because if I knew I had to sit there and go to that 6-second ad or 20-second ad, I'd be like, no, this is a waste of time. But since I did that, I'm just like, I'm watching just so much more of it. So if the price is right, I think it might work. But I see the issue with the unskippable ad in the beginning. That's such a huge barrier. If it's a 3-minute video, why on earth are you going to watch a minute and a half video before it?
So this is going to be interesting, because right now Google, you know, they're supposedly in talks with NBC Universal, Viacom, 21st Century Fox, and CBS. So obviously all the major networks, and they'll probably carry every single major cable station out there. $35, you're getting, I don't know, let's say you're getting 75 HD internet-based channels. I think that's good enough for most people. I think that's great. I would like Hulu to implement this, or Netflix. You know, I don't like switching over. I don't like using different applications for different purposes. I would like Hulu or Netflix just to be that my one-stop shop, and this is what I use to access, you know, cable television or movies and whatever. Now, we're seeing other companies get into this, because Sony's into this now. They have a cable service. I think Sling has a service like this. So it's not extremely unique. This is not something new. This has been going on for a little period of time. But it may jumpstart the whole ditching cable and going IP-based for your broadcast television if a company like Google gets into it, or if Hulu gets into it.
I think it definitely matters what kind of perks you get, because I know when Sling came out, they had a really low price, but their cloud DVR service was a little iffy. You couldn't pause everything at when you first started it. It was difficult to have, you couldn't have more than one stream when you first started that service. They've changed some of those things. Sony PlayStation View is a pretty good service, but it's similar to the pricing of a cable bundle. So if you're looking at the pricing and you're looking at your cable company, it's kind of hard to go and justify, I'm going to pay $50 a month for 50 channels when I could do the same and have a lot more television shows, on-demand services, DVR, and all this other stuff for the same amount of money. So these cable companies, if they want to stay relevant, have to like lower their pricing on this stuff. But it's definitely early days, because for Sony to wrap up all those contracts was not easy. And they were slowly adding more and more things. Same thing with Sling. For somebody like YouTube to do this, which has been like a known foe of networks for how long?
Sure,
how many lawsuits again between all these companies?
Oh my
God, back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, it was tremendous. The networks were terrified that this was gonna destroy their, you know, between piracy. And I get the piracy thing. But if I'm pointing my camera phone to the screen to get a 30-second funny clip from The Office, you know, how is that harming NBC?
Well, I mean, it drove them nuts enough to start up Hulu, right?
Yeah, I know.
That was the thing. They're like, YouTube is going to kill us. Let's start our own thing. And they did. It's Hulu, and that's got its own issues going with it, because there's a lot of conflicted interests within.
Yeah.
And as more of these media companies keep buying other media companies, it gets weirder and weirder.
You know, you touched on something earlier with YouTube Red and commercials and commercial-free. I have been a Hulu subscriber since the beginning, and I've paid since the beginning. For the first, let's say, 2-3 years, you know how often I used it? Rarely. I mean, I never, ever use it, to the point that if I got a new credit card, or my credit card was stolen, I would forget to activate it for months. I would forget to put in the new credit card because I never used it. I started using it. That is probably the number one application I use for media consumption on my TV now, because of the $11.99 ad-free package.
I also have that.
I no longer watch DVR content on my TV. I no longer watch network television. All I do is watch all my shows on Hulu. Almost everything that I want to watch is on Hulu.
It's like having like an unlimited DVR, essentially.
Essentially,
and the
other
thing is, like when I said the idea, when you have no commercial ahead of it, I'm willing to try out more shows. Even with shows, I'm like, you know, I wouldn't watch this normally because it's going to be an ad and there's going to be ad breaks. But when you lose that barrier, I'm watching all kinds of things again, even on Hulu. So this happens a lot. You'll use the service a lot more because you're actually enjoying the experience. And that is a big deal. If Hulu can convince some of these live broadcasters that there could be like a commercial-free channel.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. That's almost going to be impossible.
So here's the other side of this, right? And I want to know, we have about 120 people in the chat room right now, and I want to know, would they be interested in signing up for a service like this, where it's Hulu or it's Netflix or YouTube, where you get your cable content and you pay $35 a month to get it on, you know, your through those applications? I'm curious about that, because here's the thing. If they're all offering the same thing, which they most likely will, right? When you talk about broadcast television, you really can't get ahead if, you know, if Comcast isn't offering Discovery channels, and, you know, Verizon isn't offering Viacom channels, which they own Viacom, but you get the point. You can't get ahead of it, so you have to offer everything for the most part. 99% of the packages are all the same. I think the advantage for internet-based IP is internet-based television would be the quality of the content, not so much the content itself. Because if you, I'm crazy about the quality. Part of the reason why I can't cut cables, because I watch sports, and watching sports on an IP-based system like MLB TV or the WWE Network, it looks terrible. It's just not good. MLB recently, I think for this season, upped their quality to 720-60. It was 720-30, and it looked miserable. Even with the 60 frames, it's still like 5 megabits a second. I can't watch, you know, there's a major difference when you're watching a broadcast, broadcast quality feed at 20 megabits a second or 18 megabits a second, whatever the QAM allows, to 5 megabits or 2 megabits. It's enough for me to go crazy. Now, I'm in the minority here. It's the it's good enough mentality. It's MP3 and FLAC, you know. There are going to be people that don't jump over. It's Blu-ray and streaming.
Yeah, I think when Hulu was first starting its pay service, you'd pay extra and you get 720p video over 480p video. I like the actual quality of video when it's higher bit rate. Blu-rays with 30 megabits per second, like your over-the-air antenna is going to get you something like 30 megabits per second on a broadcast television channel. Now, when you're watching that on cable, because they got to fit all this stuff in the pipe, there's a lot of compression going on. So if you're watching something like HGTV, it might look like garbage.
A lot
of the bandwidth is going over to ABC or NBC or something like that. So even those, if you look at a cable channel version of a broadcast network versus the over-the-air version, it's not night and day, but it's if you're really paying attention, you'll notice that the over-the-air stuff blows it away.
I had this conversation with Chris Tobin on Monday night, and you actually came up 10 times in this drink session we had. All good.
As I do.
All good. Some bad. All good, though. We were talking about, compression and things like that. Exactly the conversation we're having. And cable, depending on the carrier and depending on how much they're putting through one pipe, yeah, you're going to get, there's going to be a problem. And they also allocate bandwidth depending on if there's a serious baseball game or a football game, you know, whatever it is. But if we're talking in general, like Fios has had bigger pipes. I don't know if that's the case now, but Fios generally delivers 15 to 20 megabits a second for, a decent channel, HD channel. CBS, on the other hand, CBS uncompressed over the air, you're getting up to upwards of 30 something megabits. Like you said, it's way better, but you're never going to get that with internet-based content.
It would take a while.
We're talking 10 years, right?
A sustained stream of that quality, I mean, that doesn't happen very often. That would be all on the download side, too. So 30 megabits per second, just imagine that actually happening. Not like when you did the speed test. The whole time, and it's all dedicated to the one thing you're watching. That would be very impressive, but it's going to take a while. Broadband speeds are there. I think Google Fiber can do it. I think fiber networks like Verizon, they could do it. But when it's the old technology, it just doesn't work exactly the same.
It doesn't. No, it's we have to think of it differently. I mean, you watch. You're a sports guy, right? Mm-hmm. You watch baseball. You like the terrible Yankees.
I do like the terrible Yankees, and they are terrible.
You're a guy from Queens, so it's I don't get it, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. When you watch sports on the internet, does it affect you? Are you looking at this and saying, wow, this looks miserable? I'd rather watch this on a network feed or a cable feed.
You know, I think I've been disconnected from cable so long that I've almost normalized to what web video looks like. Then when I go and watch cable TV, I'm like, oh, right, it does look better. It's smoother. It's crisper. It just seems like it's more alive. But certainly right now, I don't really care how I'm watching the video when it comes to baseball in particular. I think for faster sports like hockey, very hard to watch it on the web.
Very hard to watch, yeah.
Because if the compression is not done right, you lose the puck. And if it gets blocky and your connection goes down, you can't see what's going on. So it's actually a really big deal with higher speed sports.
I think a lot of it will have to do with the way that we're delivering this. You know, right now they're doing, I don't know what the delivery method for Verizon is, but, you know, in order to do lower bandwidth, which they're going to have to for these services like Hulu and all these services, because they're not going to push 15 megabit streams for, you know, The Office or some TV show. And some people will be able to see it, but the majority of people will never, ever be able to get that quality because there's so many other variables that come into play. Not only does your pipes need to be, you know, a decent amount of bandwidth, but, you know, everybody's running Wi-Fi. There are people with their routers in their basement, and they're going up to the third floor of their apartment building, and they're complaining that they can't watch Hulu, you know? So there's a lot of variables here. The thing that's going to change a lot of this when we're talking about quality is when we go to H.265. Because they could squeeze half the bit rate and get the same amount of quality.
I think that's the codec that's being used on Ultra HD Blu-rays, right?
It's possible. I think probably Suncast, if you're in a chat room, you would know. Because they're not using it because of licensing issues right now. It's not cheap to license. But once that gets sorted out and more people start licensing it, a lot of this is going to change. This discussion that we're having right now where you can't ever get 1080p over a broadcast or you can't get 1080p for the masses. Once we go into that bubble, yeah, it's a lot of that is going to change. We're a couple of years away from that, and hopefully by the time that these networks like Hulu and Netflix and all these people get their act together, that'll change. I'm excited for this. You know, I'm big into this cord cutting thing. But the more I get into cord cutting, the more expensive this gets because I keep adding services to my lineup of television. Not only do I have cable, but I have, you know, sporting packages now online, and I got HBO and I got Showtime, and I'm buying more and more. It's not cheap if you think about it in that sense. But if you only watch one thing or two things, Hulu will most likely be enough for you.
I'm just thinking like that's again, like on the cable company side, they have to figure out, when can they start saying it's cheaper to stay with us and the quality will be more consistent? And you do have all that authentication stuff, so you can use the apps and you can make sure that you can watch all the stuff on demand. So they usually have a larger catalog, some of these other places. So we'll see how it shakes out over time. What's going to happen, I really think, is if everybody has all the same content, the only way this is going to work is either you sign exclusives, like you can only get HBO with this one company, which would really be bad.
That'll ruin this whole entire... It's actually going to go backwards if that's the case.
And that's probably very difficult to do because they could probably just start their own service and then make their own money versus being exclusive. But I think it's all going to be about the features, like the cloud DVR functions, the interfaces, being able to find a show you want. If you finish the show, an algorithm that says, this show would be really good. You think we might like it? Same thing with... when you finish a Netflix show, it tries to give you another one.
Yeah.
A service that keeps you on its service is the thing that's going to win, not necessarily what they have.
I was having a discussion with somebody the other day, and we've spoken about this tons of times, and you actually make fun of me for this, about how I use my technology. And you say that I use technology like I'm like 10 years behind. Like I do certain things that... normally, like we were talking about, I think we were talking about social media, and you know what? It was at WrestleMania when you came over. We were talking about how I tweet, and you asked me, you said, how come you're not using your phone or a tablet? And I go, what am I, nuts? Why would I do that? And you looked at me, and everybody at the party looked at me like, well, how do you use social media? And I go, on my laptop. I think for a lot of people, that's television for them. They want to watch TV on the TV. And they want to sign up and they want it to be easy and they want that cable provider doing it and it's the convenience of it. If they have Netflix, they might be more inclined to just use Netflix for everything. I mean, because they've gotten conditioned to using it that way.
It's the fire hose thing, I think, that's important. If you're not constantly have to figure out what's going on, you know, I watch the WWE Network all the time. Yeah. One of the things I like about it is that there's a schedule, so to speak. So they'll just keep putting stuff on for you so you don't have to think about it. And I think that actually matters a lot with these online services, because if you have to pick, you ever seen the catalog on any of these services where you're just like, I don't even know where to start. That's why Sony PlayStation View is pretty good, because they have a very easy interface.
But isn't it live? Their interface is live. They do live content, right?
But you can kind of go backwards too. So like if you have the guide up and you see a show, you can get the on-demand version of it. It's available. So it's kind of like the way cable does it now.
I like, you know, Hulu does something interesting where they have a algorithm, I guess, that they're doing now. And they've gotten a little better with suggested videos. So if they know that you watch something, they'll autoplay something that they assume. And it was kind of whacked out. Like I was watching Bob's Burgers and it put on Teen Mom up. Following Bob's Burgers, which made no sense. Like, how would they assume that I'm into Teen Mom too if I'm into Bob, which I am, by the way. Farrah from Teen Mom, she's something else, that one. It assumes this, and it wasn't really that intelligent. Now it's a little smarter. I think some sort of playlist like that would make a lot of sense. I don't know. Maybe live content is not, it's not where it should be. It should be all on demand, and if the on-demand content is smart enough and it creates channels based on that, that may be the future.
Yeah, this is going to get messy. And still, Hulu hasn't come out with their service. YouTube hasn't done it yet. And getting everybody in line, that's going to take some time.
Here's another question for you. Do you watch content on your phone?
Sometimes. More on my tablet than my phone.
Like, are you ever watching Netflix on your phone?
I can't remember a time where I actually did that.
I've never done it. And there are people that's all they do. That's how they consume.
I'll watch YouTube on a phone for some reason, but not Netflix, because that's like, you dedicate yourself to that.
Oh, no,
YouTube,
I watch no content. I watch no content on a phone, ever. I'll listen to a podcast, that's about it. I cannot watch it on a phone.
That's really weird. You travel a lot, don't you? You don't just watch something on your phone?
No, never. All right. Never. I just listen to podcasts.
I'm always afraid about hitting my data cap. So I don't bother with video much on my phone, because I don't want to be standing in line at a bank and then see this little thing saying, your 3 gigabytes are up. So I shy away from that. And so that's why I don't watch it so much on my phone.
All right. I didn't give you a proper plug. People can follow you on Twitter at Iaz.
That's me.
And what do you do now? Where are you? What do you do? Who are you?
I'm Iaz Akhtar. I've been a podcaster now for 10 years. I've been in the tech field for 10 years now, actually over 10 years. And I work at this place called CNET, which is owned by CBS. So that's a disclaimer here. So none of the opinions I say have anything to do with the company. Just let you know that now. I am a video guy. I do a couple of shows over there. Top 5. You can see that at top5.cnet.com. You could see Radar, which is cnet.com/radar, which is your weekly tech show. Although, if you're watching this, you probably don't want to watch a weekly tech show, because you're already watching a weekly tech show.
No, you know I'm telling you, look, the audience is, everybody's watching everything at this point.
So if you want to watch another one, watch that one.
Please watch it.
It's like 3 minutes and it's weekly, so you get caught up real fast, because one of the things, and this I can say, and this is going to be fun because I haven't said this in a long time, at least on air. You know, I don't really like recap shows that last like 2 hours and they don't talk about the news. So that's why I like quick shows. I like this show just fine, but this show isn't 2 hours.
By the way, guys, this is What the Tech. You're watching What the Tech. It says it on the screen.
It's okay. Usually I'm here talking about wrestling or peace or about terrible movies. So I'm also on the GFQnetwork.com.
It's like, what happened? Where's Paul? What happened to Paul? Where is Paul? Paul changed.
He changed a lot. You know, he decided to use a Mac. He threw out his Microsoft Band. He's got his Apple Watch on now. He's got, oddly enough, an Android tattoo on his face.
Yeah. Paul's gone.
He's traveling. Yeah. He's traveling, guys.
Guys, I want to continue this discussion. We have a lot more to talk about, but before we do, I want to talk about another one of our sponsors, and that's Harry's. We got two guys with a beard here talking about Harry's, which is hysterical. If you are looking to get a great shave, and I'll tell you why I absolutely love Harry's. The fact that their products last forever. High performance German blades. I have been, you know, buying the same exact razor for the last, let's say, 15 years. And they were great. These things were phenomenal. And all of a sudden, they cheapened on these blades. And it just, I go through them every, I mean, I'm literally throwing out these razors every time I use them. I haven't had to do that since I got my Harry's razor. These things last forever. They look great. They're a great gift to give, actually. And here's a great thing. You get $5 off your first purchase when you enter in code WhatTheTech at checkout. When you use the offer code WhatTheTech at checkout, you get $5 off your first purchase, which is phenomenal. Some other perks. This thing is delivered right to your door. You don't have to deal with the pain in the butt. You know, plexiglass counter, waiting for someone to unlock it. Harry ships it right to your door, so you don't have to deal with any of that. It'll most likely be the best shave of your life. I literally use this thing just to clean up, you know, my beard. Ayaz has a very nice beard, too, and he could benefit from a Harry's razor as well.
You know, got to keep the neck clean.
Got to keep the neck clean, yeah.
I'm not kidding. I actually had to do that today, and then I've been growing this out kind of like a playoff beard, but it's going to get trimmed back down because this is not normally how I keep it. So I'm going to try this out because I just bought new razors because I have to keep buying new razors for this other company. So why not try this out?
Yeah. They're actually phenomenal. They're great guys. We've spoken about them forever. It takes less than 30 seconds to place an order on their website. Over 1 million guys have made the switch to Harry's, and you should too. Go to harrys.com. That's HARRYS.com and enter the code WhatTheTech at checkout, and you get $5 off your first purchase. I recommend getting the Truman. That's the starter kit. And it comes with everything that you would need for a phenomenal shave. Harrys.com. Enter an offer code. What the tech at checkout. So, Ayaz, let's talk about some Microsoft stuff. Windows 10 has 300 million active devices now. Microsoft announced that Windows 10 is now in use on over 300 million active devices. The firm also stated that the free upgrade will expire on January 29th. So, guys, if you have not updated yet and you're looking to get What the Tech,
It's actually
get Windows 10.
It's July 29th.
July 10th. What did I say, June?
You said, I think, January.
January,
yeah, July 29th, and it's going to get expensive, too.
Yeah. So, I'm curious on what's going to happen in that aftermath on July 30th when people did not update and they're starting to scream, oh, my God, I want a Windows 10. I don't have it.
Well, I mean, they can have it. It's just going to cost them $119. But what's probably going to happen is Microsoft's so dead on in getting this operating system adopted as much as they can. They might do like free 2 weeks after this or like a free extension, so to speak, just so they can make sure that more people get this. But they have to eventually, you know, cut off everybody. Say, look, you got to pay for this actual operating system. Or maybe it'll work with a cycle where new laptops are coming out. So like, if you really want it, you don't have to buy it outright. You can just buy a new laptop that has Windows 10. This number is staggering. 300 million is pretty gigantic. I don't have a sense of scale, though, when it comes to how many Windows machines there are in general. And I know there's no way this number is really being padded by like Windows 10 devices that are phones. Because if you saw Microsoft's numbers, they don't really sell phones very well. And I'm not trying to bag on the company. I'm just saying that Windows on the phone has not exactly been lighting a fire since Pocket PC days, maybe. So it's been a while. So this is a pretty serious and substantial number. So if you don't have it yet and you're stuck on Windows 8 or 8.1, I don't really see a reason why not to upgrade, other than if you, I guess, love Media Center, because I think they rip
yes,
it out.
Apparently every Media Center user is a fan of What the Tech, because we hear about it all the time, how, you know, Media Center is great and they use it and they have a very specific thing they do with it, and it doesn't really work well with Windows 10. There is a way around it, but stick with Windows 7 if you're using Media Center. But I mean, they're getting the momentum is continuing for Windows 10. You know, I've slowly updated everything. I think I have two more machines in the studio to update to Windows 10. And it's been a slow change for me because obviously these are production machines. And I can't just on day one say, okay, I'm going to update everything and just go in there blindly. There are problems that can happen. Just yesterday, 2 days ago, I updated one of our Skype machines to Windows 10. I'm sorry, one of our encoding boxes, our streaming box to Windows 10. And we had a disaster of a problem. All of a sudden, it's a black screen. Every time I open up a window, I get everything goes black. Turns out it's a major driver problem on the AMD side with for the video card with Windows 10 that is still going on. So I am able to troubleshoot this and go through drivers and find the proper driver that works, okay? I don't know if all these people that are just going to click on that a couple days before Windows 10 expires for them, you know, the free upgrade expires, are going to be pleased with this update. It's super easy on a majority of the time. On majority of the machines that I've updated, I've had no problems whatsoever. But the machines that I have had problems on, it's been some work to get it working properly.
Yeah, but those machines you're talking about are pretty customized. They're somewhat single function. You've created an appliance, so to speak. And when you do that, you are usually much more informed. So you'll be able to go, should I even upgrade before this happens?
Yeah, it's a discussion I'm having with myself. I'm not just clicking on that Microsoft logo mm-hmm. on the bottom of the screen. I'm curious on those people that have clicked on it. And, you know, like I'll give an example. I have a, I don't know what this is. Is it a Dell? Yeah, it's a Dell laptop. It's about 8 years old. And I got the notification to put Windows 10 on there. And I did it just for a testing purpose to know if how this is going to work on here. The machine is failing constantly. I mean, there's constant issues with it. The CPU is shooting up. I'm having Microsoft Defender. There's a Defender file that's causing 100% CPU resources. I had to go in. I had to fix that. It was a pain in the butt to do. I'm curious on those people having these problems.
I haven't experienced that. I've only upgraded one machine. I was Windows 8.1 to Windows 10, and I was using it. This is a computer hooked up to my TV, so I can just goof around with it. And it runs faster, and it's better. It's also a Dell. It's actually technically an Alienware box, but it runs just fine. So I don't know if it's what you do to computers.
Well, it's not all the time. Listen, majority, I want to say 85% to 90% of the computers that I've updated, I've had no problems whatsoever. It's been easy breezy. Interestingly enough, the problems arise when you do a clean install, not when you do the upgrade. I've had no problems doing an upgrade at all. Everything is fine. These aren't clean installs. The box that I just put it on, the encoding machine, it was from 2012. Asus has no more driver support for this thing. There's no Windows 10 driver support for it. And I'm noticing that it's not running as well as it did. So it's a couple of years old, yes, but I'm able to find the proper drivers to make it work the way that I want it to work. Most people are not going to be able to do this. I don't know if this is the best formula for someone that has an 8-year-old machine sitting there that got a Windows 10 update. I don't know. I would like to know from the chat room also. We got a bunch of people in there. How old is the machine that you updated? I'm obviously, the older the machine is, the more problems you're going to have. But I don't know if more people are going to experience this because they've held out. You know, the day before this update, are they just going to, we're going to have a plethora of problems for people that don't know what they're doing?
Well, if anything, I mean, considering the free upgrade cycle that happened, I'm sure that there was tons of complaints filed with Microsoft and saying, hey, look, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so the iteration of Windows 10 that'll be out by the end of July, what is it, May now? There might be enough patches that it'll work for, I hate to say this, like, I think it's like supported machines, like the past 3 years or 4 years, that will work perfectly fine. I don't know if they'll be bold enough to say, look, you should not upgrade. You hit that button and it does a little check and says, no, your machine can't be upgraded. It actually does check if your specs are enough. But whether it'll run into driver issues, I don't know if that's ever really been a true thing that stops Windows from installing itself or says, you don't have a compatible graphics card, we're stopping.
I have a Dell, right? The one that I might use to monitor everything. So when I'm looking here, I have a Dell here. I can't install Windows 10 on this thing. I can't do the upgrade, because it fails every single time. It tells me that there was a critical error and I can't do the upgrade. And I wiped everything out. I just put Windows 7 on there and I went and I just did it on a clean Windows 7 install. Went to do the upgrade and it cannot do the upgrade. It fails every time.
How old is that machine?
2011. 2011.
That's 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a long time. I mean, I'm not one to throw out old technology. I still got like an old MacBook sitting around in the hopes that I might use it for some reason. But it's also like a black MacBook. So if you think about that, that's a long time ago. It's Core Duo processor. Never going to use that thing for anything. Yeah. But I didn't think 5 years was enough.
But here's the thing. I have a 2009. I have a 2009 gateway that I use for Skype. And I had no problems. Just easy breezy. Installed and done. So it really there's no rhyme or reason here. It's not like, well, if your computer is 9 years old, you're going to have problems. If your computer is 7 years old, you're not going to have problems. I think a lot of it has to do with what you have on there and specific for the hardware of that computer. I just don't know if everyday users are comprehending how this works and they're not having these problems. And that's not, I guess they're not, you know what? They're not having problems because we're not hearing the whole Windows 10 sucks thing as much as we heard for Windows 8.
You know, when I think everyday user at this point, I don't even think of somebody who upgrades anything.
Okay? You don't think they're upgrading it? You think they're just letting that Microsoft thing just stay there?
Yeah, like how many XP machines remained in the universe because they just don't decide to move up? Because if something works, you don't mess with it too much. And their everyday user not necessarily is going to bother to do this. Everyday users don't necessarily even like patch their machines when there are critical security patches. There's some people out there who are using, you know, IE all the time, like back in the old days. Like, they haven't upgraded to something better or different. I'm not talking about IE 11 or Edge, but, like, I'm talking about older stuff. Everyday user to me, for Windows in particular, because Windows is still a gigantic part of the market, the clientele of it is going to be IT professionals who are really telling people, this is what we're using, this is not going to be. Yeah. They're going to take care of all those machines. But it's not going to be like mom and pop. We're like, I don't know. I mean, do I upgrade my machine? I don't think upgrading to people is a thing.
I don't think it was a thing. I think now they're kind of forced into it being a thing, in the sense that it's in your face, and it's for some people, it's scheduling it. You know, it's a very confusing process where it says, you know, do you want to upgrade to Windows 10? If you hit no or hit later, it schedules it to be later. So I think that's when people are having these like weird, like, oh, what the hell just happened? You know, that pop-up is there for everybody. And the buttons itself say, there's no no. The no is when you hit X. If you hit, oh, no, I want to do it later, it actually means you want to do it later.
So people have to read?
People have to actually pay attention. And unfortunately, okay, we don't live in that world.
I don't have sympathy for people like that. Now, look, I'm sorry. If you can't read and you're at a computer, don't start clicking buttons willy-nilly. Ask an adult.
Isn't that the problem with PCs in general? 90% of the problem with PCs in general and all those security vulnerability problems and the malware and the spyware, it really is people clicking willy-nilly.
But that's okay. There are idiots out there. There has to be idiots out there. Like, I mean, think about how many websites that have these beautiful ads that look like that you've been compromised. It's like, no, you haven't. There are a lot of different ways people can get fooled by things, and that's one whole other situation. If you can't read what's going on and you're afraid about upgrading your Windows machine, hit the X, and that'll stop it at some point. Just hit the X.
Listen, I'm afraid on what's going to happen when all these security vulnerabilities and all these compromises start happening on the phone.
You've seen the deal with China and Android and a lot of the malware coming out of there.
I know, but it's way scarier than your computer. Think of the information that you carry on your phone. Think of what a lot of people have on their phones. And think of how they use a phone. You know, in their minds, this concept of security, this concept of viruses, this concept of pop-ups do not exist on the phone. When these things start happening, we're going to see people getting in major, major trouble. This is going to be a devastating thing to deal with.
You doomsaying now? I mean, look.
I deal with people constantly. I'm probably the most technical, and I'm not a crazy. Listen, I'm an enthusiast. I'm not an expert by any means, but in my circle of friends, I'm the most technical. And the questions that I get asked, the things that people say to me, the problems that I have to fix are mind-blowing to me. And these are intelligent people. Not that they're dumb. They just don't know, and they panic, and they click.
Well, I mean, look, Android and Google have done a decent job. When you get an Android device, you know this, that you can't just install things from a third party right away. You actually have to go into the settings and hit OK on that. Amazon's done the same thing with their version of Android, which runs on the Kindle. You got to approve third party app stores, which if it's on Google Play, Google has gotten really adamant. It used to be like, hey, come on in. If you have an app, it'll be right there the second you would submit it. When people were taking advantage of this in the early days, they eventually stepped in a lot more. There was a lot more security. It came a lot more checks.
Yeah.
And apps were being bounced out. So it's about which app store are you going to go to. So that's that first part. The second part is you go to Apple. You don't have a secondary choice. If you do find a secondary choice, it means that you've jailbroken your phone.
You've done something,
which means
yeah.
You know better. Yeah. Windows Phone, I don't have to worry about that because it's a very small piece.
What apps? What apps?
BlackBerry's out there. Same thing. Actually, they run Android now. So probably at this point, you can just have the same kind of thing I said about Google. So yes, people can always get themselves in trouble should they choose to. But if they get their machine compromised, and this is what I think is actually the scariest part about phones being compromised, is they're tethering to a connection. Like they're always on the network.
You're always connected. Yeah, you can't shut off the connection.
Like so unless you put it in a Faraday box
or
something when you're done with it, or Faraday cage, it's likely transmitting if it's been compromised, but that's a big if, and that's just use your common sense. This is the same computer stuff I've been saying since I think I taught my dad computers. Just read what it says. It'll be okay.
Well, here's a statement. Hellcat in our charm says, a client of mine got a virus on his Mac. First of all, that's I got to comment on that after that.
Impressive.
Cost him $200 to get it off. So Macs have issues too, and now more people are buying the Macs, and we're going to see more of this. If your client got a virus on the Mac, I am alarmed at where this person is going. where have they got? I mean, listen, it's possible if they were trying to pirate some Mac software and, you know, they went on a BitTorrent client and they were downloading Office for the Mac or whatever, you know, I don't know what the hell you pirate on a Mac. Some pirated BS on a Mac you're downloading and you got something, you were compromised. Yeah, that's your own fault. I'm going to give you a great example here about how people don't know what they're doing and it's a scary world. I have a friend, he got a corporate phone, okay? Corporate phone that they give back every couple of years. So they get the corporate phone, and then they give the corporate phone back and they give them new phones every, you know, 2 years or whatever. He got in a lot of trouble because of what he had on his phone when he handed it in to the corporate phone. When he handed in his phone, there was stuff on there that shouldn't have been on there. And he felt like his privacy was violated due to him having these photos and it going to the IT guy. He didn't comprehend that this is a corporate phone, so you keep things off of this that you don't want others to see. You don't want your company to know about. He did not comprehend that. And he goes, it's a phone. How would they even know what I'm doing on there? And I couldn't explain it to him clearly enough for him to understand, dude, everything you do on this thing, it could be somebody could get it. Now, it's a corporate phone, and it should be business only. And he goes, yeah, but they gave it to me to use. Like, this is not a dumb guy. This is just, he doesn't know. And when we talk about Windows 10 issues, I think most people just don't know. And when I say, I really hope these vulnerabilities, these issues that we see on the PC side never come over to the phone on Android or iOS or whatever other platform will exist in the future. It's going to be far worse for the end user than we see with Windows. You know, people, they do dumb stuff on the computer all the time, but they don't have a lot of the information on their computer that they do on their phone.
I'm thinking about the way people use their phones. If anything, there's a positive side to the fact that so many people have smartphones. There can be so many vulnerabilities. I think the turnover is just much faster. People will notice this faster as these mistakes happen over and over again. I mean, there's a reason why. If you look at Android when it started and the way it looks now and the way it's run now, totally different beast.
Very different.
Same thing with iOS. iOS was, when it started off, again, closed completely, the third-party apps. That's changed over time a lot. So just the making sure these systems run really well, because not only will people get mad about the user screwing up, it's not like people get, they can get mad at Microsoft, they get mad at their phone, their actual computer manufacturer. Yeah. But when your Apple iPhone is screwed up, or your Google Nexus is screwed up, or your Samsung Galaxy S7, people get mad at the company and Google at the same time. And these companies are, I think, way more reactionary.
Yeah.
And they have the ability to be reactionary compared to the old days. You had vulnerabilities. It's like, okay, so how are we going to get the patch to you? Now we have internet connection. Oh, we're going to have to restart your device. Are you okay with that? No, I'm going to hit later. I'll hit later. Versus if you see that there's a new version of Android that's free, here's Marshmallow. You're like, yeah, sure, I'll take that. You don't care that it's secure. You don't care that it's better. You're like, yeah, it's new. I'll take it.
Yeah, so, but but the delivery method on, let's say on iOS, for example, right? A new version of iOS comes out. It's a much smaller support group, right? Like, you're supporting less hardware, you're supporting less chipsets. The point of everything going wrong is far less than on a Windows side, where you have to literally support everything out there, and you're taking a guess sometimes on what you're doing. It's a very different world from the PC to the mobile platform. Listen, I'm a fan of running operating systems on the desktop like you run it on mobile, where it's constantly updated. You don't know what's happening. It's just constantly updating, and you're just using Windows. You don't care. You get a little update, and it updates for you, and it's an endless update cycle until it's old and they just stop it. I think it works for iOS. It kind of works for Android as well when they want to do it. I don't know if that is the most logical way to do it for people.
So, like, Microsoft and legacy support on Windows has been pretty longstanding, but there are still cutoffs and limitations as to when they'll actually still upgrade your machine. So it's just they seem to be a little bit more,
yeah,
I would say, lax on how many things they'll support, yeah, because they're not really thinking a lot of people do it.
It's an interesting discussion to have. I mean, this is really, we're in this weird period where there's two separate ways of doing things. And I don't know if they'll transition to each other, you know, the desktop side and the mobile side. We've seen Microsoft struggle on the mobile side for many reasons. But, you know, right now, the story came out with Intel is pretty much killing their mobile platform with the Atom mm-hmm. chipset, which is the next story that I had here. And I don't know if that's good news or bad news. You know, a lot of the rumors were, and I had not heard this coming from any sources, that the Surface phone was going to be an Intel chipset, an Atom-based chip in there. I think that was more of a fantasy and more of a, well, it makes sense if they did this type of thing. But now this is a major, major problem. And this whole concept of the Surface phone being in this Intel-based chipset where you connect it to a display and you're running full-fledged, you know, Win32 apps is now out the window in that sense, because Intel Atom, they've canceled that program right now. Intel's not had a good year.
Yeah, they cut 12,000 jobs. So that's the plan until next year. They're trying to transform themselves into something better. They ran into a huge wall with mobile in general, because as much as I've talked to Intel, I have talked to people at Intel, they've tried to make these things not so power hungry. They just don't have the same kind of ability. Another thing is Android runs on ARM just fine, just fine. And I know there was a version of Intel chips running, I think, on a Moto phone. That there was a version for Android for Intel devices, and that does exist.
Oh, there was one. Yeah, I forgot. Was it Moto?
I believe it was Motorola at the time. But there's a couple of different manufacturers that actually had Android running on Intel chips. So it's not that they can't do it. It's just that ARM does it better. And the other thing is there's a lot more competition, because ARM is licensable, right? You have Qualcomm. You have Samsung making their own chips. In some respects, Apple makes their own. They're also ARM chips.
Yeah.
There's all of these companies who can just say, I don't need to use your company. I'll make my own. Intel is this vertical, basically. Like, we make these chips. They're amazing. If any time they wanted to make the best ARM chips on the planet, they could do that. They've licensed ARM before. So if they actually just say, look, we don't have mobile, okay? We don't have mobile. That's fine. Why don't we just make the best mobile thing out there? It would be a little bit of a swallowing of pride. And maybe they could do something better than Qualcomm, because Qualcomm Snapdragon processors are considered quite good versus like Samsung Exynos, which is actually considered very good.
It depends which Qualcomm chip we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, but you have choice, right?
Yeah.
If Intel goes into that game, they could really probably do some real damage if they wanted to, because they can't do it with their current architecture. X86 in mobile devices very difficult to work with. x86, nobody even says that anymore. But yeah,
I get what you mean. Yeah, I get what you mean, though. Well, they said the reason why they're doing this is to allocate more personnel to developing 5G, their 5G efforts.
That's it.
Which I don't know. That sounds like a baloney answer to give as why you're killing off an entire chipset platform to allocate more resources to 5G efforts. I get it. You know, I get what they're doing, but I don't buy that as the reason why. It's probably they can't compete in this. You know, they're realizing that what they're doing is not working, and they're probably going to have to start from scratch and come up with a new platform.
They got to figure out something, because tablets run on ARM. And laptops still, at this point, they're running Intel. And that's still really powerful. I think Paul had an article up, actually, about people, the death of Windows, should people just continue to see Android change as it has, or even Chrome OS, because a lot of these things are getting really powerful, but they're still not a full-fledged laptop. They're not a full-fledged desktop PC or anything like that.
They're not, but what do most people do on their laptops anyway? They browse. That's all they're doing. They're browsing. They're maybe using Skype, maybe some sort of messaging service. The functionality of the PC, the things that we used to use PCs for, are now replaced by very, very easy applications on your phone.
And the other thing is, there used to be a time where I'd use a PC a lot without an internet connection. These days, give a person a computer without an internet connection. Watch how they will go, what do I do with this? Like, what is this? What is it for? So, like, without an internet connection, things totally change for people. Like, I use it for, like, video editing and things like that. So you can be offline. But we're not the normal everyday person anymore. Like, if you're doing it for encoding machines or whatever, you're not going to need something super powerful. And actually, in some respects, you can do some of this stuff on some of those crazier tablets out there that are getting more and more powerful.
It's not even a tablet. You know, I talk to Paul about this all the time. You know, I used to, let's say I took a nice photo, right? What would I do? I had my DSLR, or I had my camera. I would connect it. I would upload it to my computer. Then I would take the photo and open up a photo editing software. It doesn't have to be Photoshop. It could just be some, you know, very limited photo editing software. Do some editing there. And then take the photo and then upload it somewhere. Now, I don't need to have a camera. I don't need to have a photo editing software on my PC. I literally just do it within Google Photos. Those things like that, have really replaced what we do and the power needed for a basic laptop, for a basic desktop. You know, it is a scary world that we're in, because the PC is being threatened right now by Chromebooks, you know, $300 Chromebooks.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, just
because
it's being threatened.
I don't know. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think we've simplified what we need. You know, things, you don't need the horsepower to do simple things anymore, and the phone is good enough. So if you're going to the store and you need a laptop just to, you know, type whatever emails and whatever you need to do on there, you're going to spend $399 probably, but just buy some Chromebook, or $299, buy some Chromebook.
Yeah, there's also Intel machines that run full Windows at that price point at this juncture. So there's a lot of options right now. Intel, whether they have a future, I'm sure they're not going anywhere. I know they've put a lot of money into their whole Internet of Things initiative, trying to make sure they're the chips running on the little devices that don't really need a lot of power. And that's supposed to be something bigger. Remember, I believe they were in this really fancy watch, the Tag Heuer watch, that's like $1,800 or something insane.
Yeah.
Intel running on that, even I thought it was a little strange. If they can run in a watch, that's impressive that they didn't kill the watch. I'm not trying to make fun of Intel here. I'm just trying to say they've been very power hungry. The other thing, the reason why they're power hungry, is their chips are usually freaking fast, okay? They got some real performance out of them. But the current generation of operating systems, when it comes to like Android and iOS, they don't need anything near as powerful as that to do any of the stuff they need to do. And like you're saying, people use their apps basically exclusively. They don't need to go into a PC and do all that work, because it's nowhere near as seamless as it is to just do it on a phone all in one device.
It's an interesting, we're in a weird weird crossroads now where nobody really knows what the answer is going to be. You know what I think the answer is going to be? We're going to have this major revolt with technology, and people are going to be totally turned off, and they're just not going to walk around with phones ever again.
That's not gonna
in
happen.
50 years, people are going to be like, you believe these people that were like zombies just staring into their phone and staring into their laptop? What were they thinking? And then they're going to fly, because everybody's going to have a jetpack.
No, 50 years. One, no jetpacks.
Jetpacks.
Not a one. 50 years. Yeah, that should have happened 50 years ago, and then now, and it hasn't happened. No jetpacks.
I want to live in a world where the Rocketeer is a thing.
You know, the Rocketeer doesn't make a lot of physical sense, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So, because how did he not get burned back there? I don't care how, like, asbestos pants, but...
Yeah, probably.
What I'm trying to say here, that's why Microsoft's big bet has always been getting a PC in your pocket. Even when they had Pocket PC, when they had those ultra mobile PCs, those little machines, they're trying it now with their Surface devices. And the Continuum idea is not a bad one, because the biggest thing Microsoft failed with when it came to Windows 8 was saying, here's a brand new interface that's going to work for everything. It's going to piss you guys off who use desktops, but it's really good for tablets and phones. But we're going to alienate the rest of you. And now they finally figured out the right way to do this with the phone, because you got the phone and it runs one version of the operating system. When you plug it into a dock, you get that full-fledged PC. I think that they might be a little early to the game when it came to this mobile device that turns into a full computer, because they really need Intel in there to power up.
With Continuum, you mean?
Yes, with Continuum. Yeah. But iOS and Android, they could probably, or Apple and Google, they can probably build the same thing in within the next like 2 years easily, because their machines are getting more and more popular, and they're getting more and more powerful, and they're getting more mature, such that people understand all of the language that the education involved to teach somebody an operating system. Google and Apple have spent the last like 5 or 7 years now showing you pinches, zooming, here's how you do multitasking, here's how this is going to be. Yeah. This is the new language. And Microsoft's just like, they're kind of stuck. So yeah. Intel, without them, they might be running into another problem.
It's an interesting discussion to have. But with that said, it's time to wrap it up. We're going to do a post show. We're going to do 15 minutes of a post show. So I actually have a lot of questions for Ayaz. We want to learn a little bit more about Ayaz, and then we could talk about this a little bit more. Stay tuned. If you're watching live, stay tuned. You can watch it live here on the GFK Network. If you're watching the podcast or listening to the podcast, go to our website. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can access the show there with a small donation of anything you want to give. You can access the show there. And check it out there. We're going to be, we have a lot of stuff coming your way with that. Ayaz, plugs.
Andrew, go to cnet.com and go to gfqnetwork.com and go to twitter.com/Ayaz, because those three places, you will see pretty much everything I'm doing. So go to those places. They're good places. I'm a big fan of all of them.
They are. And what are you? What projects are you doing independently? Anything coming up?
Yeah, I do some stuff at finitecomedy.com or killingtime.tv, or if you want to see what I do and if you watch what I do and you're like, hey, I want to give them some help, go to patreon.com/Ayaz. I do a show called Killing Time, which is about entertainment review. And we're a couple of dollars away from bringing back a paleontology podcast, if you'd believe it. Very close to that happening.
Dinocast.
Dinoshow.com is actually the old site. It's dinosaurs before they were fuels, because I thought the joke was funny back then, but now it's the title. There it is.
That's excellent. Excellent, excellent. Guys, you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. Paul will be back next week. Hopefully. Is he back next week? Let me think. Hold on. What's next Thursday? What day is Thursday? The 12th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he'll be back next Tuesday. And then the following week, I'm in Los Angeles, so I'm gonna be doing the show from L.A. So that's always fun, because I look like I'm at Epcot Center with Spencer Studio glowing purple behind me. So that'll be a lot of fun to do. All right, guys, that's it for this week. See y'all later.